Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
We've had 35 resurrections of the dead. The closer they are to freshly dead, the easier they are to resurrect.
So I see this giant angel, and I asked him his name. It's a financial company, and I realized this angel is here for our finances.
And that's a true literal story, by the way.
These people are charlatans, and it's about time we draw a line in the sand and stop fraternizing with the wolves.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Also known as Mr. Tomato Head, this is Wretched Radio. My face is on fire! 70 degrees, that's all it was in Atlanta, Georgia yesterday. 70 degrees, and I am as crispy as bacon, at least the way that bacon should be cooked. Wow! Did we have a wonderful day at Kennesaw State University? I will be truly transparent, fully confessional with you on my drive over to the university campus to talk to the kids about the best subject in the universe, Jesus Christ. I was apprehensive. There was a little fear and trepidation, concern it might not go well. What if the authorities get involved? Yep. All those thoughts caused me to drag my feet to go a witnessing. 6 hours later, when we were done, I left clicking my heels. That has happened every single time that God has goaded me to a university campus to witness. You go a little concerned. It's just the way that it is. Which is why evangelism has been called an irksome task. You start a conversation with somebody that you know it could go sidewinding on you. But I have to confess to you, overcoming those fears every single time has been worth it. And I've learned something in witnessing to the kids on campuses that perhaps will make it less of a fearful scenario for you. If you have been worried about witnessing to, well, frankly, anybody, I think I know what might at least minimize the potential for it to explode on you. Why are you going? Why are you talking to that person? What's your end game here? For me, once upon a time, it used to be in my evangelistic zeal, had to get out there, had to get the whole thing out, and had to get you to repent on the spot. And I was going to win. And those conversations did not go nearly as well as when we go to a campus or anywhere, frankly, because we love the Lord and we love people. And you don't go to steamroll them. You don't go to race through the witness encounter. But you go because you want somebody to hear the best story ever told, which is the true story of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And it's been my experience, and at this point, quite honestly, you would have a tough time persuading me that this is not correct. When I go to a campus much more meekly and humbly, okay, wait a second. Jimmy?
Yes.
There's, what piece of literature, who was described as meek and humble?
Was it Jesus?
Yes, exactly. Isn't it funny? When you endeavor to act like Jesus, how people are even attracted to it. So here's what happened yesterday at Kennesaw State University. We arrived at about 10:30 in the morning. It was active. The Frisbees were flying. It was a glorious day. The little campus center, I don't know what they call it there. We used to call it different names. The Village Green, the Quadrangle. They were out en masse. And it was, quite honestly, fishing in a barrel. There were all kinds of kids that we could talk to. All kinds of folks were available, and that's why we left at about 4:30 in the afternoon. We just kept going and going and going. And as we were prepared to pack it up and go home for the day, a young man walked up to us and said, "Excuse me, I'm over there with that pro-life booth. I'm kind of pro-life, but I'm not a Christian. Would you like to talk about it?" "Yes, I would." "Okay, one afternoon on a campus. One afternoon, and a kid approached us to talk about it. What would happen if your church were out on a campus every week? Do you think you might have somebody approaching you? I could almost guarantee you will. We didn't have to go fishing. The fish actually jumped into the boat. Why? Because we were out on campus, somewhat visible, hung out for hours, and apparently the word got to this kid that we were talking about these things, and it wasn't a fight. It wasn't an argument. Sat down with another kid on a bench and said, "Hey, would you be willing to talk to us?" And his response was, "If it's about anything but politics." And I said, "Well, why is that?" He goes, "It's just always a fight. They don't want to fight. They really, it seems to me they're not in the mood for arguments. But if you're willing to go to a university campus and just talk to somebody and engage them in areas that they're not used to discussing." We had another kid say that very thing. I'm sorry, did I say kid? I meant young adult. Another young adult said, this was really good. Because, you know, we're in class, we're just learning stuff. This is deep. So thank you, was the response. If you will go to a university campus, prayed up, desiring not to be triumphant in an argument, but to simply share some great news with somebody, I'm telling you, these conversations, I don't think one was less than 25 minutes, to be honest, I give or take. I think one was because we actually tripped into a Christian. Hey, what are the odds of that actually happening in the Bible Belt? All of these kids, they go to church, or they went to church, but they're not able to articulate the gospel. And one kid actually was. So we kind of cut that one short because, no offense, believer, but we don't want to talk to Christians. We wanted to talk to people who are lost and confused. And when we sat down and just engaged them without, like, put them up, 25 minutes. I would like to beg your church to consider getting in the game. Because here's where we were deficient yesterday. In two ways. Okay, lots of ways, but I'm just going to leave it at two. One, we go there and then we leave. And we're far away. Our studios aren't close enough to have a regular presence. And our studios aren't set up for kids to come and visit us. Your church, on the other hand, if it is close enough, guess what? They could actually, I don't know, start going to your church. And so we simply cannot continue with them. Furthermore, our regularity is irregular at best. And we go to different campuses. And we can't be there over and over again. After one afternoon, we had a kid approach us because he had questions about Christianity. And by the way, he didn't want to fight either. He was genuinely asking questions. So I was kind of shocked, quite honestly. Clearly, kid had done his homework. He said, "Could you explain to me what the New Testament does with all of those Old Testament laws?" No way. You're not, what? You're asking that kind of a question? And I said, "Well, I can give you a really simple answer. And it'll take about 10 seconds, 20 seconds. Or I could give you something a little bit more. What do you want to chew on?" And he goes, "Give me more." So I was able, I'm sitting on a bench. Please visualize this. I'm sitting on a bench. My tears had dried because I had been crying because somebody came up to me and said, "Excuse me, are you Bill Nye?" But I got over it. And then I sat with this young man explaining to him there are three different ways to deal with Old Testament laws. Number one, there are three columns: civil, ceremonial, the running of the nation, how the moral laws. So three different columns. And Jesus removed two of them, but not the moral laws, so we keep those. That's one way. I don't adhere to that one, but I don't think you're a heretic, and hopefully not vice versa. or all of the Old Testament laws are in force unless the New Testament says, vice versa, all of the Old Testament laws are gone unless the New Testament affirms them. I tend to fall into that latter interpretive column. Nevertheless, that's what I was talking about with a student on a bench with my face getting baked like a cookie. Is your church close to a university campus? Are you close to a university campus? Might I encourage you to do two things? Make it a regular habit. Find a fishing hole and a system that works for you. There was a pro-life group out there. I'm pro-life, changed my mind. Find your thing. Get out there, do it regularly, and I promise you, as challenging as it might be to get there, you'll be thrilled to pieces when you leave there. And by the way, this might be the last great chance for us to do so as social media continues to shut down. My second piece of advice when you do this, wear sunblock. Oh, I'm telling you, this is Wretched Radio. Not to offend people who love math, I'm not one of them, but these are numbers that should not be boring. $500 is what the average family saves with MediShare every month, not per year, every month. Right now, before the end of February, you will also save $170 off of your enrollment fee. Here's another number, 400,000 members. Another number, 25 years, MediShare has been providing affordable biblical health sharing. Telehealth, huge network of doctors, and fellow believers who help one another to share their healthcare burdens and even gasp, pray for one another. Our final set of numbers, 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE, to learn more about MediShare.
Hey, yo, fam, it's your main man, Jimmy Jam. Apparently, the hip and relevant thing to do these days is target millennials, and that's exactly what we've done, too. We found our very own millennial, John Fabares, who put together a squad and hit the road to tackle the tough issues that millennials are struggling with. Why is there evil in the world? Is Jesus really God? What is truth? Millennials have questions, and Road Trip to Truth is answering those questions in a clear, concise, and biblical manner. We want to reach this generation, your kids and your grandkids, and we believe this resource is an excellent way to open the door to important conversations we need to be having. Visit roadtriptotruth.org and get your copy of this 13-episode series along with the Bible study that's perfect for middle schoolers through adults. It's roadtriptotruth.org. Roadtriptotruth.org.
59 million people died last year from diseases like heart disease, cancer, diabetes. But the number one leading cause of death, its very own category of 42.6 million lives that ended, abortion. It is hands down the number one leading cause of death on the globe. And that statistic can overwhelm us and cause us to give up. But it should motivate us to get engaged, get involved, and fight for one life at a time. And we can do that through preborn.org/wretched. $28 buys an ultrasound. 80% of the time, mom chooses life. That is a good investment that saves lives. Would you please consider supporting as many ultrasounds as you can at preborn.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. Nahum, whose name means the Lord comforts, brought a message of comfort to God's people and a prophecy against Nineveh. Nineveh was a powerful city, but they were no match for God. He punished them severely for their wickedness. When you see evil or are tempted towards evil, remember that there are only two possible outcomes. repentance, or destruction. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Question, was Jesus a leftist? Answer, what have you got, Christian? This is Wretched Radio. If you engage online on a campus at your business, you might discover that some people have the impression Jesus basically was a socialist. Or Jesus was just love, 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 love. By the way, when people have that understanding about Jesus, that he's just love and mushy-gushy, I don't care to engage with them on the subject of his holiness and wrath. Instead, I prefer to demonstrate to them what love is. Foreigner didn't know, but the Bible tells us what love is, and it is far more extraordinary and extreme than what most people think. So when they say, well, you know, Jesus just loved, man. Okay, well, let's just see how the Bible defines that. And if you scoot over to 1 John 4 and verse 10, it tells you that real love is this. Jesus died for enemies. So you want to talk about love? Oh, yeah, Jesus was love. And this is how he demonstrated it. Now, here's a question for you. If that's how we're to love, have you been loving like that? Is that what you mean when you say we're supposed to love one another? The world sings all about love all the time. The Bible defines it for us, and it tells us it is far more fantastic and frankly difficult than anything the world sings about. And so to those people who would say that Jesus is love, and the way that he showed love is by engaging in social issues. In other words, Jesus was a leftist. I don't know who Robin Schumacher is, and maybe it's Schumacher. If she were German, it would be Schumacher. Sorry. Had to wipe that up just a little bit. It's not easy. How did German radio people do it? They must have to wear a face mask. I mean, not even for COVID. They've got to have something on to keep the microphone from getting all spitty all the time.
Yeah, we thought face masks were new.
No, and, well, imagine, wow, how's about Jewish radio? Whew, their microphones would be sopping wet. Robin Schumacher-Macher asking the question, was Jesus a leftist, in the Christian Post, and answering it in a way that I think is really helpful. On occasion, you bump into an article, a book, that has a fresh way, not with something fresh and new, but just to present an issue. And I thought her responses were so helpful. What would you say to somebody who said Jesus was really a socialist? He was a lefty. How would you respond to that? Perhaps this will help. Jesus honored God. Leftists don't. If you take a look at left history over the eras, you will notice a theme: anti-God. Jesus, pro-God. And that's just one extraordinary difference. The position on God taken by atheist leaders of the historic left are diametrically opposed to Jesus' position. Perusing Karl Marx's feelings on Christianity, or reading Denis Diderot's statement, quote, "Men will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest." Well, that's really loving, isn't it? Are just tip of the iceberg examples of a movement that despises God and his authority. Jesus loved his Father. The Father loves the Son. One demonstration, Jesus is not a leftist. Two, Jesus esteemed Scripture. The left mocks it. The left looks at the Bible as a book of fairy stories. Jesus constantly quoted the Old Testament and affirmed it, saying the Scriptures cannot be broken, that it's divinely authoritative, imperishable, historically accurate, truth, and that it has ultimate supremacy. The left? Voltaire and his lover, Emily du Châtelet, concluded their formal examination of the Bible by saying it was nonsense. They called Jesus' Sermon on the Mount trite, ridiculous, absurd, and his resurrection comedy, which is actually quite staggering, that they would call the Sermon on the Mount trite, ridiculous, and absurd. Now, I could understand them seeing it as absurd, but trite? Hardly. It was dealing with the issues that every philosopher, every economist, every political expert, every sociologist wrangles with. The big stuff of life. It's not trite. And as far as it being absurd, from a literary standpoint, you have to at least be able to recognize, if you're being fair at all, the Bible is extraordinary in that regard. It is, there are so many, it's so somewhat encouraging and annoying all at the same time when you hear somebody on TV who's a secularist use a biblical allusion or a statement that was penned by Tyndale that we still use this day. The Sermon on the Mount is extraordinarily written. Best sermon ever. With all due respect to Jonathan Edwards, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, the Sermon on the Mount is better because it was delivered by our Lord. And you cannot call it absurd if you're going to be fair. When I was at Kennesaw State University, a young man was studying English literature. And I said, so what's your favorite English literature? And his answer was probably the King James Version of the Bible. And I said, do you believe the Bible? No. So why do you think it's like the best piece of literature? He goes, it's amazing. I mean, it standardized the English language. The kid had done some work, standardized the English language, and we still use so many of the phrases today. And the way that it's written, you just have to give it up. It's pretty amazing stuff. With all due respect to Voltaire and Émilie du Châtelet. Number three, Jesus embraced truth. The left embraces post-truth. Jesus was full of grace and truth. He is truth in his very essence. He testified to the truth, asking his Father to sanctify us in the truth because his word is truth. The left? Ha ha! There is no truth. It can't even be known. Jesus was not a leftist. Number four, Jesus prescribed peace. The left prescribes violence. Go check out that little French Revolution that took place, courtesy of the left. Heads were lopped off. Jesus, blessed are the peacemakers. He was the Prince of Peace. Never told his disciples to act violently. And yet, the left, they are violent to the core. It's what they are, and history bears it out. How do you respond to somebody who claims that Jesus was a socialist, he was a social justice warrior, he was a leftist? Might I encourage you to respond with a pretty hearty guffaw? You're kidding. Let me tell you why that's so absurd. I don't even see this as a position of debate. I see this more as an authoritative response. It's really, my friend, so clear that you haven't studied Jesus. Let me give you a few demonstrations to prove that Jesus was not a leftist. And you're not even going to get into particular social justice issues. You're talking about his character and his nature and his attitude toward God and the Bible. Reveal he wasn't. I wouldn't be kind of, well, you know, he really was. He cared about people and the poor. This is more like, oh, friend. I don't know who gave you that glass of Kool-Aid, but let me just help you understand. The living water is not at all who you think he is. Number five, Jesus practiced loving his enemies and encouraging forgiveness. The left doesn't tend to do that. You heard about doxing in the cancel culture? The left does not forgive even their own. Ellen DeGeneres, the darling of the left, gets devoured when she says anything that is kindly toward people who are on the right, we'll say. Why? Because that's the nature of the left, but it's not the nature of Jesus Christ. Number six, Jesus taught servanthood. The left aspires to power. The greatest of you shall be your servant. I am among you as one who serves. He came to seek and to save and to be a servant. The left, not so much. Consider the French Revolution, 1789. It was about power, and it was about tearing down people, wrecking the place, so that there could presumably be equalité. What would be your response to the individual who accuses Jesus of being whatever the particular term is they want to use, a leftist, social justice warrior, or even a socialist, I have heard? Might I suggest you hit it hard, but don't leave it there. That's who Jesus is. Now, my friend, I have a question for you. Who do you think Jesus is? And lo and behold, rather than just winning a debate on the person of Jesus Christ, you now will enter into an evangelistic encounter, which is the only way to help somebody think better who's confused enough to think that Jesus was a socialist. They need to get saved. This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I am Jimmy Hicks. American taxpayers will be forced to pay for abortions if President Joe Biden's COVID relief bill passes. Biden and Democratic congressional leaders have made no secret of their goal to end the Hyde Amendment and force taxpayers to pay for the killing of unborn babies and elective abortions. Their first attempt to do so is coming in the form of the 591 American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. Though the abortion funding is not immediately apparent, it's coming through the $1.9 trillion funding bill's COBRA health insurance subsidy. On page 95, there's a provision that would authorize the government to pay 85% of the cost that laid-off individuals would otherwise incur through this September to continue their health insurance plans through COBRA payments. The financial cost of the subsidy would be $7.8 billion. And that particular subsidy does not include the Hyde Amendment, which prohibits taxpayer funding for elective abortions in Medicaid and other federal programs, or any other limits on funding abortions. According to a Susan B. Anthony List analysis of the bill, it also includes $750 million for global health activities and billions more for community health centers. These funds also do not include any restrictions on taxpayer-funded abortions. Last Thursday, Republican Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia pushed a new bill that would keep future governors from prohibiting religious services in the case of a public health emergency. According to the Associated Press, House Bill 358, entitled the Faith Protection Act, was crafted amid the COVID-19 pandemic, and the legislation would guarantee that future governors of the Peach State would not use their emergency powers to specifically limit the practice of any religion. The bill, which cleared the Georgia legislative panel on Wednesday, would require the governor to seek legislative approval to renew a declared state of emergency every 90 days, and additionally, legislators would be allowed to place limitations on the governor's emergency powers. A pastor abducted from northeastern Nigeria by Islamic extremist militants reportedly says in a video that they will kill him on Wednesday, March 3rd, if their ransom demands are not met. In the video sent to a Nigerian online news outlet, Pastor Bulas Yaikura of the Church of the Brethren in Nigeria pleads for the government and Christian leaders to secure his release. The report states that the video came from Boko Haram, which in 2015 formally aligned with the Islamic State and changed its name to the Islamic State West Africa Province. Nigeria was the country with the most Christians killed for their faith last year, at 3,530, up from 1,350 in 2019, according to Christian support organization Open Doors and their 2021 World Watch List. In overall violence, Nigeria was second only to Pakistan, and it trailed only China in the number of churches attacked or closed, according to the list. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Important dates in Christian history. Henry VIII's Act of Supremacy makes the king, not the pope, head of the Church of England. While Henry's concerns were largely political, his Archbishop Thomas Cranmer worked to mold the Anglican Church into a thoroughly Protestant church. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
The world was surprised, but I'll bet you weren't. This is Wretched Radio.
Todd, do you hear that?
The crackling, yeah, fiery sound. Yeah.
Yeah, you hear that? No, what is that?
Well, that would be my face! It's on fire!
Oh.
Thank you, Southern Sun! And thank you, foolish man, for not listening to your wife when she said you should probably put some sunblock on before you go to the campus all day. It's going to be our first sunny day in 8 years. So did he listen? No. And now we all have to endure that fiery sound because I'm ablaze. Man, my face is hot. Am I whining?
Well, I mean, I couldn't hear you over your face.
You want to know what you're actually hearing?
What's
this
that?
This is, I don't understand this. I guess people who love fireplaces but don't have one. The title of this video is 12 Hours of Relaxing Fireplace Sounds.
12 hours.
12 hours. And it has 12.2 million views since December of 2008. So apparently, people love this sound. And then I'm looking at the fire. It's mesmerizing. I can almost smell it.
Can you watch it for 12 hours?
No, but I'll tell you. Here, let's do this. I had it queued up to 44 minutes. Let's listen to it at 2 hours and 23 minutes. Let's see what this sounds. Oh, see, the fire is going down in its intensity. Oh. Let's jump to 4 hours. See, it's going down. I got to tell you, what kind of logs do they have? They haven't changed the logs. And you're now 8 hours into this thing, and it's still burning. I want to get this wood. I want this kind of fire in my fireplace, which I actually don't have. It's not that it's a sour issue between me and Mrs. Friel that she wants a gas fireplace and I want a wood-burning fireplace. We've worked through it. We had mediation, but we did work through the issue. Perhaps you are surprised, perhaps not, at the announcement that Coca-Cola is Woke-a-Cola! By the way, do you want me to turn my face off? Should I put an end to this?
It would be nice.
All righty then. Woke-a-Cola, lady! Because they are doing training to help white people be less white. Coca-Cola sort of denying it regardless. This is a systemic racial issue. Because corporations all over the country are going about the business of doing what Coca-Cola is reported as doing. And that is to do sensitivity training for white people. Now, not only is this something that we need to become familiar with and frankly start getting used to, but this is just something that is unworkable. If you apply what supposedly, and it seems like they are, that Coke is doing, white people, boy, doesn't this just, this racial division just, are to be less oppressive, be less arrogant, be less certain. That's my favorite. So the next time that you get a Coca-Cola and it only has about 9 ounces, hey, don't worry about it. The person running the can fulfillment plant wasn't certain what 12 ounces look like. Didn't want to be certain about, didn't know about signing that contract, that agreement for transportation. They want their employees to be less certain. Hey, that's a good way to run a business, isn't it? Here's the rest of the list. Be less defensive, less arrogant, be more humble, listen, believe, break with apathy, break with white solidarity. The world heard this and they're staggered. If you've listened to this program perhaps more than once, which frankly we haven't found anybody who has, nevertheless, there is a reason that we have been on about critical race theory. Not only is it the mechanism, the philosophy that is being used to dismantle our country, it is making its way into the church. And like the camel who gets its nose under the tent, it does not satisfy itself with just sniffing what's in there. It forces the rest of its body in. And we have seen this over and over and over again. And the modus operandi that I think is almost, if not always used, is the one that we are seeing today with critical race theory. If you have studied the issue at all, if this has happened at your workplace, which it probably has, frankly, or it won't be long, especially if you work for a big corporation or a hospital system, heard from somebody in Ontario, they're doing the very same thing that Coca-Cola is doing. Get these emails regularly from people. They're teaching this in my company. Yeah, they are, because it is indeed systemic. Critical. If anything is systemic, critical race theory is systemic. And they get it in under the guise of having a conversation. They want to talk about the issues. They want to be able to have the hard conversations. Have you heard those phrases used? And if you haven't, regarding critical theory, you certainly have in the church. Let me take you back to the early 60s, even the late 50s. The liberal synods of the Lutheran Church started having conversations about the role of women. The next thing you know, they're ordaining them. The next thing you know, that they're affirming homosexuality and having gay marriages. And it all started with, we're just going to have a conversation. Or its cousin, we're just going to do a study on the issue. We just want to start talking about it. Why do they do that? Because it works. It always works. And that is the lingo that is always used to get the ball rolling, to get the camel's nose under the tent. But then they shove both humps into the body. And that is what we are going to see, and we are already seeing inside of the Christian church. And so if you read this stuff about Coca-Cola and you go, wait, what? This is what will be taught in your church if critical theory is affirmed as a helpful analytical tool. Be less oppressive, less arrogant, be less certain, be less defensive. In other words, just don't try to defend yourself. Because by the way, if you do, it just means that you're actually more racist than you even know that you are. It's a do you still beat your wife sort of strategy. And this is what you're going to get. Be more humble, listen, believe, break with apathy, break with white solidarity. You have been trained since a child to be racist. The study shows, according to the people who are training Coca-Cola people, that by the age of 3 or 4, it is just burned right into your brain that white people are better than everybody else. Did you know that about yourself, white person? This is so Gnostic. It's so unwinnable, and it's so not Christian, and it's so not helpful, and it is so pervasive, and it is so making its way into the church. Do I have proof of that? I certainly do. The Council for Christian Colleges and Universities, that would be your CCCU, launched a website February 2021. Well, that seems plenty current now, doesn't it? Featuring a database of racial and ethnic diversity resources for the Christian higher education community and other interested readers. You can visit the website yourself. They claim to be middle of the road. You know why? The resources featured on this website are intended to assist institutional leaders at Christian colleges and universities in facilitating learning and leading conversations. There it is. Let's get the camel's nose into the Christian university tent, and we'll just have conversations. By the way, the books, even though they claim, hey, we show a representation of all sides, look to me like it was a whole lot of really aggressive social justice books that are being promoted. So then I decided to take a look at the number of universities that the CCCU serves. This is the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. Now note, they just started this particular site, this particular resource. The CCCU has had relationships with hundreds of Christian universities and colleges for years. Now they're providing this resource so that we can start having a conversation. And I started looking through the list, and it's not all liberal wackadoodle universities. It's like some really sound Christian universities, some really conservative Christian schools. Now, please note, the Christian school does not affirm what the CCCU did. That's reversing the order here. The CCCU is bringing in these resources to get them into the universities under the guise of having a conversation. And that is precisely how it begins. Resources in the database include books. Yeah, they do. It's the books that are the most troubling to us as we study the social justice, the most radical Christian books, TED Talks, webinars, articles from prominent news websites like CNN, Forbes, works by Pastor Tim Keller, a video about race in America hosted by VeggieTales. Now, this is one more demonstration that all of our prattering here at Wretched Radio about critical theory is not nearly as much about what is going on in culture or with Coca-Cola. It is studying it to identify it so that when it comes knock, knock, knocking on your church's door, if it hasn't already, you will be aware of it and you will be able to sniff it out and warn your pastor, your elders, because it will not stop with conversations. It seeks total submission. Give up every single thing that you hold dear, that you value as a church. It all has to go because it is all inherently racist. So if you love your local church, you love what you do on Sunday morning, you better not be loving the critical race theory. This is Wretched Radio. Brilliant. I have been telling you the Masters Academy International is brilliant, thoughtful, biblically conceived, equipping ministry, training indigenous pastors to rightly divide the word of truth and shepherd local congregations 17 countries around the world, but they do it in a way that is absolutely brilliant.
There's a danger in theological education done in abstraction from the local church. You produce eggheads that simply don't know how to walk people through life issues. We need to have theological education tightly interwoven with church life.
That is precisely what the Masters Academy International does. It trains pastors in conjunction with the local church. It is brilliant and so effective, and it bears so much fruit. Please consider supporting TMAI at wretched.org/pastor.
Hey, thanks for being here and listening to Wretched Radio today. We are always so grateful when you share your wretched stories with us, or your comments, your questions, your conundrums, and your snarks. And there's two easy ways to always share with us. First, you can email Wretched at idea@wretched.org, or you can leave us a voicemail on Beep Talk at 1-877-282-BEEP. Either way, we love hearing from you. Just like this story we recently received from Callie, who says, "Hey Todd, we're so thankful for your ministry. You continue to bless our family with sound content and counseling, and we've been supporting y'all since 2010. We trust you and your counsel." Well, thank you so much, Callie. Send us more of your wretched stories, comments, questions, and conundrums and snarks at idea@wretched.org or by calling Beep Talk at 1-877-282-BEEP. idea@wretched.org or 1-877-282-BEEP. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Despite what all of the headlines say, there is some very good news happening around the globe. Jesus is still fulfilling his promise to build his church. Nothing is going to stop it. And right now in Eastern Europe, he is doing just that through the Tomorrow Clubs, kids clubs all throughout very poor Eastern European countries. And thanks to you, wretched person, more and more clubs are being sponsored, more and more kids are being saved, and more churches are being strengthened. Paul Marty from the Tomorrow Clubs.
Every time we visit a Tomorrow Club and talk to kids and leaders, we are blown away by the gospel's power to change lives. And the Wretched audience has been such a big part of making that possible.
Would you please consider sponsoring your very own Tomorrow Club? $30 a month. 30 Little Disciples. TomorrowClubs.org/wretched.
Revelation. Is the Bible really God's word, or is it just a collection of human ideas? Here are a few words the Bible uses to describe itself. Perfect, God-breathed, authoritative, without error, the word of the living God. The Bible is God's inspired and trustworthy word to humanity, through which he makes himself known and continues to draw us to himself. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Will the Southern Baptist Convention go the way of Disney? This is Wretched Radio. Perhaps you heard about Disney. Now that their streaming platform is Monster, they're going to start airing The Muppet Show. And with that, they are going to include offensive content disclaimers before certain Muppet Show episodes. Why? Well, because they're not current. They aren't hip. They're not as enlightened as our current woke culture is. And so they want to warn people, look out, those Muppets have got some bad worldview. And you perhaps went, oh, come on, they're puppets. Right. But this is about way more than a TV show with silly characters. This is about worldview. And it is directly connected to what you are going to see take place this summer in the Southern Baptist Convention. Permit me to lay out my case. Disney says that the program, The Muppets, certain episodes, this program includes negative depictions and or mistreatment of people or cultures. These stereotypes were wrong then and are wrong now. Rather than remove this content, we want to acknowledge its harmful impact, learn from it, and spark conversation to create a more inclusive future together. What is this? What, the Muppets? Now, we'd all agree, if there was something that was nasty and mean on the Muppets that does indeed hurt somebody's feelings, Christians should have no difficulty saying, just pull the episode, then get rid of it. All right. We don't want people to get hurt. There is a place for that inside of the Christian community, that even though all kinds of bad ideologies are being used to promote a hypersensitivity about anybody possibly being offended, while it is certainly an American right to have free speech to even potentially offend somebody as a Christian, we don't want to do that, do we? And I don't want to fight for the right to make people feel bad. I mean, I want freedom of religion and free speech. Specifically, what I'm saying is, I don't want to cling to, well, too bad if you feel bad about that Muppet episode. You got to watch it anyway. No, I don't cling to a Muppet episode. It's a Muppet episode. And I genuinely don't want somebody to feel bad. Whatever you feel about blackface, if that makes people feel bad, I don't want it. Period. And if there's somebody out there, and I suspect there are people who would say, well, that's just like, we used to do that all the time, man, and nobody got upset. Well, if people are getting upset, I don't want people to get upset. And I'm willing to state that without having to be fearful that I'm compromising on free speech, freedom of expression, or freedom of religion. We Christians don't want people to feel bad. But we know what's afoot with this Disney disclaimer on Muppet episodes. It is critical theory at work. This is yet another expression of that. And it goes on to say, Disney is committed to creating stories with inspirational and aspirational themes that reflect the rich diversity of the human experience around the globe. Unless, of course, they don't like it, then they won't air it or produce it. This is critical theory again. By the way, these shows that have the disclaimers on them have been added to a total of 18 episodes with these wicked, awful people like, you know, Jim Nabors, Steve Martin, Peter Sellers, Crystal Gayle, Kenny Rogers, Jonathan Winters, and just a ton of names, Johnny Cash. These are all people who apparently did not know 30 or 40 years ago that they were being racist. Now, can we admit if they were, then, okay, cool. Then just don't play the episode. We get that. But this is critical theory being applied with a new level of scrutiny. Anything that might have any innuendo that could be potentially misunderstood is now considered to have offensive content. I don't want offensive content, but I don't want critical theory dictating a Muppet show. Nevertheless, that's what's happening. What does that have to do with the Southern Baptist Convention? This summer, the Southern Baptist Convention is no doubt going to be dealing with the issue of critical race theory. I can't imagine that it will not come up. What will they do? I thought this recent announcement from the SBC was interesting, and I think something that we need to remember about the SBC, which is a knitting together of like-minded people who sign one particular faith statement and agree to be in a convention. They say it's not a denomination. They call it a convention, where each individual church therefore runs autonomously. And one of the unspoken rules in the Southern Baptist Convention is we don't criticize one another. Now, that has its pros and its cons, but nevertheless, that is the tone of the Southern Baptist Convention. You do not critique somebody. Unless, of course, they're wrong on one particular issue. And you know what that issue is. Headline: Southern Baptists move to expel LGBTQ promoting church from their denomination, we'll call it convention, this week. It's in Kennesaw, Georgia. Hey, I've been to Kennesaw, Georgia. In fact, really recently. Did I mention that I was on the campus for 6 hours getting my face baked yesterday? Nevertheless, the Southern Baptist Convention is going to boot this church out because the pastor said, quote, "These are folks who love Jesus and they want to serve Jesus. They just happen to be gay or lesbian or transgender, and we want them to know there's a place here and that where we'll love Jesus and we'll serve Jesus together. We wish the folks at the SBC well. We hold no ill will toward them, but we're ready to move and see what God's future for our church is going to be." And so the Southern Baptist Convention said, "You're out of here." Will they do that with critical theory? We'll see. It's going to be a Donnybrook, I suspect. Lots of closed-door meetings that you and I will never get to hear. But we'll see what they do, because if critical theory has its way inside of the SBC, whatever independent sort of evangelical church you are, it'll hit you like a tidal wave. It will impact you, because they're the largest evangelical denomination in the country. You will feel the effects of it. Now, please note, as an aside, while I'm grateful that the SBC is willing to depart and split from a church that is affirming something that is biblically sinful, I sure wish they'd do that with some of their churches that are theologically a train wreck. And there's plenty of them. But the SBC rule of we don't speak ill of anybody who's in the convention, I don't think is actually helping the SBC. I think I would make the case that a pastor who is a horrible theologian outside of orthodoxy even is worse than a church that's affirming LGBTQ issues. Why separate from one and not the other? That's a question that I'd love to hear the answer to. In the meantime, we're going to see how the SBC does this summer. Because if they continue to embrace in any way, shape, or form CRT in even the mildest expression, they tried this last time and it didn't work. With Article 9, Resolution 9, they said that it's just a helpful analytical tool, but it sits at the feet of the Bible. The problem is, well, manifold, but the problem is it's a hermeneutic system. It literally dismisses the grammatical, historical, interpretive process that I think most SBC pastors would adhere to for critical theory hermeneutics. It's a hermeneutical system. You read everything from the standpoint of oppressor and oppressed. So just pick a parable in the New Testament and then run it through the filter of oppressor and oppressed. And here's what you get. The story of the Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan, he is the woke Samaritan. And Israel and the religious figures, they're the oppressors, because they wouldn't help the guy on the side of the road who was hurt. Therefore, the Jewish system was bad and the religious system needs to come crashing down. That's what you now know about the critical race theory hermeneutic applied to the parable of the guy who gets shellacked on the side of the road. That's what it does. And it is going to alter evangelical understanding of the Bible if it is allowed to keep its nose underneath the SBC tent. And so as you read about Coca-Cola, and as you read about organizations, hospitals, universities, and now Disney, behaving in these ways, just sniff a little bit. All you're going to smell is CRT. And then ask yourself the question, if these stories make you outraged and incensed and a bit incredulous, then tick, tick, tick. It is only going to be a matter of time before it makes its way into your church. And you're going to find yourself hanging your head going, what happened to my beloved church? The answer is critical race theory. That is why we are on and on about the subject. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.